I think that is a significance. Because I think he would have sacrificed anything, you know, to have something true that affects.
How did your parents respond to your wife?
Well, my mother, she didn't have too much to say about it, but I know her silence was her consent.
Uh-huh.
And she never gave any indication that she was opposed. But my father did not want me to enter. As I said, Bill, I got some education, and then after the high school, my high school experience, I didn't know how. We didn't talk about it too much, and I didn't do anything to aggravate the situation. But I just was constant in my desire. But the night that I graduated was with the high school, June 24, my senior Latin teacher came to me and she said, "What's this I hear about you?" And I didn't respond to that. She said, "I just hope you're not doing something that you'll regret." So I said, "Oh, I don't think you'll ever regret it." So I took my cue from there. He had said something, or they talked about it, because I never told her. She was a teacher, Sunday school teacher, in the Swickley Methodist Church. And I always felt like she gave us Catholic kids a little dig, you know, if we came late on a holy day. "Well, what's going on in your church?" See, we had permission from the office to be late for these on the holy days. But Mrs. Peterson, I always felt it wasn't what she asked, the way she asked it. There was just a little dig in there. So, but she was a good teacher. My father then, he still, even after graduation, he didn't say very much. And I was just feeling the waters, so I announced one time, I came down here to Mr. Benigna for piano lessons at the time, and I just announced to him one time that I was going to make application that particular night. I just wanted to get the feeling. So when I came home, my mother said, "Did you do it?" And I said, "No, I'm going to on Sunday." So when Sunday came, I said I had an appointment with Mother Bonaventure. So when Sunday came, we were getting ready, and my mother said, "Did you ask your father, you know, to get on with him?" "No." She said, "Well, I think it might be a good thing if you would." So he was just about ready. He was all dressed up, and I knew he was going someplace. So I went and asked him if he had come along. And he said, "Well, I just don't know whether I will or not." But when we left, he came with us. And he came down here.
Who else came?
My mother. And that was for the time for application. And then I came on the 8th of September. And I know he stayed, he didn't go to work that night, because I came in towards evening. My brother couldn't get off, and he wanted to know for the, well, it was all home for the evening meal. So the night I came in, my mother and dad were with me, and I think Francis was too. We had a walk down from our place. So my dad said to her mother, Sister Baptist, she was a novice mistress and she was present. But my dad said to her mother, Bonaventure, and now she's not satisfied. I want you to send her home. And mother said, "Well, with him during that time. And I got, well, I think he helped me get interested in sports.
Oh, really?
Because we listened to the games that we talked about and all those things. And I was privileged to be with him when he died. Although I was just at home studying that year, I got home. He called me. I got home in time for his death. But I was living here in this house, but I didn't get my mother. And there was just some sudden. And both my parents were buried in my chapel. First.
Your activity
in
was.
In here?
Right.
Well, the very first night I came, they took me out to the dining room to show me, or to meet some of the postmen who were doing the dishes. The dishes were stacked, cut off the ceiling. I never saw so many dishes. Well, I was assigned, of course, to pantry work. And I had. I was a wheelchair chauffeur for Sister Angela that time. I must have done a good job on that my first year, because when I came back from that canonic year, they gave me the same job. But I had charge of her, getting her to the chapel, taking care of her room. But it was just pantry work, laundry work, any kind of work that had to be done. Well, then also when I was this was when I was a canonical novice. I was supposed to teach Latin for the postulants, so they all went to the public school before they got to, before I, their year was out. They were needed, you know, in different places, so that class didn't last too long, but I got my first initiation in the teaching.
I mean, they all went.
Yeah, they went on mission. Oh, so they went to Quitman Public School.
Oh, I see.
So that was it. Then at my first year to be on mission, my name was called to do a holy name who came. So when the time came, I went with Sister Gregory. We went up there to Holy Name of the King. Sister Francisca Black was a superior. And very shortly after that, we were down in the basement. She was canning green beans, and I was washing the jars to put the beans in. And she said to me, "Well, Sister, you know that you are going to be teaching a third grade and have Spanish in the high school." I said, "What?" She said, "Didn't they tell you?" I said, "Nobody told me anything about anything. They just said I was coming here." And she says, "Well, didn't you know that they didn't tell you about high school?" And I said, "No." And I think that was the year that Mother Bonaventure went to the coast with the Sisters for China. 26, and then Sister Claire Berry was a supervisor of schools there, but she didn't say anything. Nobody said anything to me. Well, I nearly died. I was shocked. Then it dawned on me the significance of something that happened during the preceding summer. One day I was called out of the laundry down here in Bayton at the laundry, and told to go to Sister Mary Grace's classroom. And I went up there and I saw a sister. I didn't know who she was. Turned out to be Sister Juliana, you know, Lavery. And she said, "Sister, we want you to take some tests." And I said, "Yes." And at that time we were feeding. our high schools, including many of them, affiliated with the Catholic University of America. So she put down the first year Spanish test, and she said, do what you can on that. And I said, I don't know how much I know. She said, do what you can. She took that paper away and put down the second year. When I was finished with that, then she put down the third year. I've had 3 years of Spanish in high school. So I'm waiting to see. I still have to wait till I go up there and see if I pass. Nobody ever said anything pop to me from that day to this. I never knew why I did that, how I did, or anything about it. Well, my first year days at the Holy Name High School, they were really hard. I got a great deal of faith because I said, Lord, God, I can do this. I don't know. I can do it. I can do it. In fact, I'd come home at night and I would cry about it. I really was put through an awful situation. Your sister, Elizabeth, was in the class. Landers, what was her name? Geraldine's sister, they were in there, John Cairns, all those people, and they knew I was a green novice, and I was wearing a green veil, novices got the cast off, and my veil was more green, as much green as it was black. They knew that I was a greenhorn, but anyhow, Sister Francesca had a very stabilizing influence on me. She didn't get excited or upset or anything. She just said to me, well, we'll just have to ask our nice mission to break up with them. She said, if you feel that you can't do this. See, I told her, I said, Sister, I can't do this. And, well, that would mean a change then, I think. But anyhow, she stabilized me. She was nice with me. She was kind. And she was understanding. All that. So I managed to live through that. Lord, did I ever pray. And so I got through that. And then on the only consolation I got was the preparation for it. I was to go to Mother Paulina's over at Holy Rosary when I had troubles. Well, when I got there, she said, what are you coming here for? She said, you know this stuff. But I said, well, I feel better that I, for you with an anchor. And I said, I don't know at all. So anyhow, those lessons tapered off, as the time went by. But I went to her when I had troubles. So I got through with that. Then I came home, from my canonical year, and I was sent back into the same situation, but I had been promoted. I skipped a grade from third to fifth. And then taught Spanish in the fifth grade, and in high school, in the fifth grade, in the elementary school. So then from there on, I think my next place was St. Gregory's. Then I had a sixth and seventh grade there in Spanish in that high school. A double grade in Spanish. Well, I said I had a varied life. But I certainly learned a lot because I had to learn it because there was no other way to teach it. And I think that made me a better teacher, that I knew what to emphasize and how necessary it was to know the detail in order to be ready for any questions that might arise. And then in 19... I was at St. Raphael's. I made my final profession, and then went back to St. Raphael's for the second year, and then from there on, I was at Holy Rosary. I went to Holy Rosary, and they said, Mother Paulina, what can you teach? And I said, well, I don't think I can teach anything. She said, what are you doing here? I said, well. But I didn't know what I could teach. that was my, you know, experience. So anyhow, I wound up teaching Latin, and I loved it. I just loved it. At that time, by that time, I just must have been around then. My philosophy became, you can't do what you like, and learn to like what you're doing. And I have never been in any situation yet that I directly apply that, you know. And I took all these challenges that came up, and that's for my whole life.
When you were Holy Rosary, were you in high school?
I was in high school full time. So I thought Latin was my big thing, big subject, then religion. And of course, I taught freshmen. But I got a lot of support. Mother Pauline was wonderful. And she was very generous, you know, with her encouragement. And that meant a whole lot to me, because I was wavering. It was sort of an inferiority situation. And I said, what do I do about this? I didn't, you know, I wasn't prepared for it. Then it was around that time that, before that, we had gone, while I was at St. Raphael's, I remember going to, and while I was at Holy Name Duke King, going to Knights of Columbus School on Saturdays. But then we had had an inhibition down here. Mr. Matheson, remember him, and Cronin, visiting professors from Duke King University. But another thing about my personal education, when I came here, I think my sister Clovis said to me, are they going to make you leave your high school over? And I said, Lord, I hope not. Nobody said anything. I said, after my father, this that experience. And she said, well, everybody that comes from public school, it has to go through the Catholic University, and, you know. And well, then I asked. And I was told, no, religion. I said, well, I don't mind that, because I don't have too much religion. But I said, I just didn't know about this in high school or whatever. So I didn't have to do it. And I said, you're one of the first ones that didn't have to do it.
What about the other two that are teaching today?
Sister Nihilus, who is at Holy Rosary, had been there, but she had, I think, a business course. But I think that the others, I don't know of any one of them that had finished high school. You know, so some of them had, you know, had a hard time high school, and a good many finished up out there. Got it here at the Catholic University. Then during the summers, remember those examinations we took for fifth grade, sixth grade, in order to be certified for the diocese? It teaches, I think, there was a week while we had to have some kind of certification. So it was diocesan certification. Each summer we came home, we took another, you know, higher grade level exam, and then we were qualified to teach any grade below that, below our chaplain. So.
Who are some of the outstanding sisters that
you've been with?
Oh, let me change it, or do you know?
Mother Paulinus was, and Mother Mary Grace.
Do you remember much about Sister Brandon?
Who?
Brandon.
Brandon. She taught the Holy Rosary at the same time I did. I don't remember too much about her. Agnes Clare was another one. Brandon was a math teacher, and she was very good. They were very excellent, you know, in their work. And scholar, I thought, in literature. And there were some of the others, Sister Concepta in the business field. You could give some notion of her skills. We had a Multigraph, that was, I think that was one of the first printers. And she and her class did the school, or the church bulletin. And I often helped back to school with this. And all of the type is in single letters. You had to pick it up with a tweezer and put each letter in the commas and the periods and the spaces. It's for the whole Sunday bulletin. And she was very excellent at that. Her work was approached for, you know, perfection on that. Now, Sister Callista Winters, who's Leviticus sister. I thought she was a very outstanding personality. And Sister Cecilia Agnes was my superior. And she saved my life and perhaps my vocation. Well, I was a boy named Duquesne one year. And she was a very understanding person. Well, she supported me against the injustice perpetrated against me. And she knew it before I did that it was going to happen. She told me, she said, I'm surprised that it didn't happen long before this. She said, I was sorry when I heard your name on a bulletin this summer that you were coming here because there were personalities there that were very different from the ordinary. So I survived that, and I was glad of her support. And Mother Bonaventure, our novice mistress, Sister Baptist. And it was interesting. Sister Hillary was also our novice mistress. She was quite different from anybody I had up to that time. And she was very strict and stern. But I was very happy to have had the opportunity to live with her later. She was one of the kindest, concerned sisters I ever had. No, I don't think so. I think Sister was an exception.
She was a lovely superior.
Yeah.
But terrible, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Well, she was thrown into this job with no preparation. I could empathize with her because I was thrown into my teaching with that in my early years. She had no preparation for this. She was German, and there's a certain militaristic quality and stoic quality about the Germans. And I think she did the best she could with what she had, and she was put, I think, at a great disadvantage. And I really was very sorry at the end of her term. It was, when I said, even I didn't know much then, but I knew it wasn't right what was happening. But, so. From 65. I went there in the summer of 65.
What are some of the changes you've seen since
you've been there? Lots of changes. Not so much parish wise, because of the pastor who was there when I went died about, well, I guess maybe it was the end of the first year in October of my second year there. And so then Monsignor was the next president. So things have been pretty much the same. There hasn't been too much change there. person, a person's have come and gone, but still pretty much the same kind of parish as it was in 65.
What are some of the changes you see in prayer life?
Well, in the prayer life in the community, I think that what I see is a more relaxed atmosphere about prayer. It's more personal and communal. And I think to a great extent that has been very good, although for reasons of being in union with the entire church. I don't lean entirely to, but I still have a devotion to the office because it's the official prayer of the church, the hours. And while there's some of it that's certainly antiquated and out of date, very difficult to read, you know, but you know what I mean, use the office book. I still, as I said, have a leaning towards that. But I see the value of this more personal prayer and the meditation and the scriptural slant that is given to it. Although the office book is made up of the scriptures too, but it's a different methodology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's more of a rote in the office where, because it's the same thing over and over every fourth week, you know, but in the scriptures you have a lot more latitude, and I do like that, and I don't know whether my difficulty with the shared prayer, I go to that, I never miss that either, but I don't think I share the way others do. Because I don't know, I don't like to use this word fantasize, but sometimes I wonder, are they fantasizing, you know, when they use these, when they share this? I have more of an analytical mind, and I like to, as I analyze. And I don't do this consciously, but it just seems to come to me, you know, why or what this means or how it, you know, how it affects me, you know, personally. I said I don't study the analysis of it, you know, that's not what I mean, but I don't know whether mine's more ascetical than charismatic or whatever you want to call it, and the other kind of prayer, but I like both because you have a variety, you know, get some insights that you didn't have before. So, but for communal prayer, I don't know whether that's just enough for me or not in the shared prayer. Because we meet once a day, and it's not always possible for everybody to be in that. But I like the relaxed, the open atmosphere about it. It's conducive, you know, to better prayer and meditation.
In your years in the community, what are changes that you see?
Well, I think the big change is there's more freedom, more personal freedom, and which throws more responsibility on the individual. But I don't always like the acceptance of the responsibility as I see it, you know, and just wonder if we're too if we're too free, if there can be such a thing as being, and I don't mean too free in spirit, but it's probably we need some education towards accepting more responsibility. But here's one on the plus side. I don't know whether it's the circumstances in which I live, and this is what I like about where I'm living. I have heard less griping, less bickering, you know, about things. Yeah, and say, get it out in the open. Now, whether that's going on and I'm not aware of it, I don't know. But this is my, I feel relaxed. You know, so relaxed that sometimes I wonder what I ever did to deserve it. But I can never truthfully say that you don't find any, at least I haven't found any of this going behind closed doors, you know, to do your writing, your talking. But, and I think on the whole, there's a better expression of charity, you know, in the in conversations and helping one another, being open to somebody else's needs. And I said, yeah, you learn this all in one day or one week, but I said, I can see. I can see it unfolding. And I think that one change in that community is our community living. Is it just not the same? I think the idea of in the old times was to strive for perfection. But I can rack it, you know, trying to be perfect and trying to do everything. I still see remnants of it. And also where there's this drive for personal perfection, can be kind of hard on those around us, you know. I don't know whether that's peculiar to me or not, but I like the new life. I like the old life too. I have no criticism to make of those who were doing it. That was a culture we were brought up in. We accepted it. Plastic, and we couldn't have grown to what it is today if we hadn't made that foundation. That's the way I look at it.
And the missions that you were on, you generally know what the people were doing for everything that they were doing.
Well, at Holy Rosary, they worked in, you know, the industries that were around. I think Union Switch Signal, was that the name? That was a big place. Westinghouse was up in there too. A lot of people worked there. There were a lot of service people, operators, policemen, people in that, like hospital work, I guess. In St. Raphael's, that was an upper-class white collar society, you know, at that time I was there. And I wouldn't know just what, you know, how to identify the kind of work they did, but they were white collar people, they seemed to be. And as one of the old pastors said, Pastor St. Kieran said at one time, he said that when they learned how to eat pie with a fork, they went up to St. Raphael's. up towards St.
I think that was somebody from St. Bernard's. Holy Rosary or something.
See, the people from down on Butler Street, you know, would move up there to the morning sun when they got a little bit higher up, picking on the ranks.
with you 2 years in Hollywood as a reporter, and we had to walk the steps of the mountain under very slowly. Do what for third floor, walk the steps.
Oh, yes.
Third floor. We had to walk very slowly, so we'd stop on every landing. And we'd talk about everything under the sun. And much of what you're saying now and your feelings of those places for the community is what you said then.
Active list for a few more years. In whatever way I can be of service, I have been tutoring, and I said I like teaching ever so much, and everything's been a little bit different to where I was. I probably would have been still in the classroom, but there was I just felt like I couldn't take what was facing me when I didn't have to take it. I thought, let's just get involved in that. No, not the students. The students are okay. If the faculties had responded as the students had, we would have been, I think we would have a more successful placement. We were having a change of administration in the school, and I had heard the incoming principal. I didn't hear her myself say this, but I was involved in the activities of the day in which it was said, and she threatened one of our sisters. They had a dispute, and I was not party to it. It was over the work in the school, and the sister felt that it wasn't the right thing. Her and whatever the difference was between her and my sister, who was to become the principal the next year or so. She shook her finger at my sister's face. The sister checked that, and she said, well, the soon to be principal said, well, I'd like to smash her. That settled me, because I thought, if we're coming into that kind of atmosphere, with the one in charge, no place for me. I didn't have any respect for her, and I couldn't. Something I think I'm not as a hypocrite. Than our school, because of the adults involved. The merger of our two high schools, St. James and St. George, certainly was a travesty. The kids got along fine. And we were worried that they wouldn't, because they had been rivals, you know, heretofore, but it was the adults and the light people in the parish. The people at St. Denis, the priests there, and I know the sisters, our sisters turned over backwards to make a go of it. And they kept, you know, making concessions, and finally the merger was dissolved. But only after it was dissolved. And I think there was a faction. then when it came time for the athletic program, we went into the WPIAL, where we had to abide by their rules. And the principal was made responsible by their rules for the eligibility of the students, both academically and physically and so on. She was, the principal was the one. And these men objected and they said they weren't going to have her dictate policy if they were paying for it. So they withdrew their support of the athletic teams. And here's where Christopher really knocked herself out. She went around the city begging for places that are, kids could play, you know, use their basketball courts. And they had to, she went to Central, she went to a Dominic High School on the north side. She went to the parish up in Mount Oliver, St. Henry's, or St. Joseph's. And any place to the Y, any place to play. And they would practice some places, some nights, and some other place, some other night, regular games. But she knocked herself out. And St. George's had a SRAM hall where we had, while the merger was in existence, we used that. Well, the high school paid $2,000 a year for the use of SRAM hall. And then when Chris would get down to open up for practice, she very often couldn't get the keys, or somebody else was on it. It was just such a slipshod thing that finally she had to go out to Central. They come out to Central to play their games. Well, then they wanted to pull out from the merger. The bishop said, no, you can't do that. Not until you've paid what you owe, because they were in default of their payments, for their contribution to the upkeep of the school. So then the school remained until that debt was paid. That was another year or so. So then he allowed them to pull out. But it was a fiasco almost from the beginning. And Vincent Barrett worked so hard, so very, very hard to make that a success. And she got no cooperation from this community, from the hierarchy at the time. As I know, she would talk things over with me. And she said, I can't get anybody to help. She said, what can I promise this? And I don't know whether we're arguing. She really got a bad rub. And she worked so hard. She worked also the first summer with the youngsters. She had the student councils of each school come together, and they worked out the things together so that they'd have some kind of, say, like school colors and what this one did do and all that. And to show the attitude of the Vince was not the principal, but she was a assistant or vice principal in charge of our building. Well, one day, August was in October of the year, the principal of the school came to me, said she wanted to talk to me, and we talked about senior affairs. And she said, what do you think about allowing the students to select